Good morning. This is the first time we've done this format where we have divided it into preachers and their wives speaking. One of the motivations for doing this is I love evangelists. My father is an evangelist, so let me put that out there. But there's something about a pastor's heart that understands, you know, intimately what people go through regularly and often. And I wanted pastors and their wives to be able to speak. And then my wife and I were talking about how so many times she is the one that I go to, and we kind of work together with things that I'm helping people with, and realize the wisdom that God gives our wives needs to be shared as well. So that's why we have couples speaking at a couples retreat. That's kind of a novelty idea, isn't it? But this session is entitled Building and Rebuilding Trust. If you have a Bible, you can turn to Proverbs chapter 3 this morning. And Proverbs 3, a couple of familiar verses. These verses served as my grandfather's life verses. How many know what that term means, a life verse? How many of you have a life verse? A life verse is something that it was really popular in like the 70s and 80s and 90s, and it was a verse that people would pick that would kind of like really spoke the core principle of their life. My grandfathers were Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6, where the Bible says, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." So trust is mentioned here. And we find that trust is necessary for peace and happiness in the home. But God did not design marriage to be survived. God designed it to be enjoyed. Now, there are seasons where our marriage is... Let me make sure I make this clear. I'm speaking of our marriage. There are seasons where our marriage, our life is really busy, things are going on, and we're with each other, but we're not connected with each other. There are seasons when just life is chaos and it's going crazy, and you don't feel connected with each other. Anybody ever experienced anything like that? You know, we love each other, we just don't feel a connection. There are also seasons where your marriage is really being tested and tried. It could be self-inflicted. It could be brought upon you by circumstances. It could be outside influences affecting that. But trust is vital in the relationship. But I want you to notice in verse 5, to whom the Bible says we're to put all our trust. It says, trust in who? The Lord with all thine heart. The sad reality is there is only one you can give all of your trust to, and that's the Lord. Because as much as I love and trust my wife, she's still a sinner. As much as she loves me, I'm close to perfect, but not. Right. So I'm still a sinner. She's still a sinner. Your spouse is a sinner. And so people can have bad days, they can say things, you know, unguarded, we can have a bad day and take it out on our spouse. I know none of y'all have ever done anything like that, but we can hurt each other. And if you are thinking, I can trust them with every part of my life, then you're setting yourself up for an unrealistic life. You're married to a sinner. But you can build trust in your relationship. And trust is often and always violated. So there's a process to rebuild trust. Do you have anything to say, sort of the introductory thought here, or are you ready to jump into it? All right, so if you're taking notes, we have a few things that we wanted to share with you, just some things that we've worked through in our own relationship and things we've worked on for this session. Number one, if you want to write some of these things down, we need to talk about the definition of trust. Our world has corrupted definitions. Biblical hope is a powerful and calm assurance of something that will happen. It just hasn't happened yet. But Disney has changed the definition of hope to like a happy feeling wish. And so sometimes the biblical truths get lost in our modern cultures. So a biblical definition of trust is a restful assurance. A definition of trust is a restful assurance. I rest in my assurance of this. The Lord is the only one that we are commanded to give our whole heart to. When the Bible says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, it literally means to have a restful assurance in God for all things. That's actually pretty powerful when you think about it. Because, okay, nobody knows what's going to happen in November, right, with the election. Nobody knows, but God does. I don't trust what Washington's going to do. I haven't for a long time, but I trust the Lord. I don't know what's going to happen. Our daughter's in college in Tennessee, states away and hours away. I don't trust the people there, but I trust the Lord with her. So you trust the Lord. There must be a distinction between broken trust and unmet expectations. Just say a little bit something about that, would you?
So I'm just going to talk about when we first got married, because we talked a little bit about that.
So
when
buckle
we first
up.
Got married, I had in my mind, and I think a lot of people have in their mind, expectations of what their marriage is going to be like, what their spouse is going to be like. And for some reason in my mind, I had taken all the good qualities of my dad. You know, he gets up early and he works hard physically every day, out on a roof, you know, he's a roofer. All the good qualities of my youth pastor, all the good qualities of my pastor, all the good qualities of my grandfather, and all these men, and I thought, well, that's what my husband should be, right? Never taking into consideration all their flaws. I just took all those good things, and that's what he should live up to, and he didn't. And so we have to be real careful of those expectations that we put on people that are not realistic, and they could never live up to. So that would not be a broken trust that, you know, it would just be, I had something in my mind that wasn't right because I put something on him that wasn't who he was. And so that's not broken trust, that's an unmet expectation. And I never even told him my expectations, I just expected him to know what I was thinking. So that's a double thing there.
But it's an ongoing battle that we have. She thinks I can figure it out, and I haven't yet. You know, and by the way, men have this going into their relationship as well, expectations. Without being crass, every young man has this expectation of what their intimate life is going to be like, and the woman is like, yeah, get off of me, right? And so there's this, that's not a breaking of trust. I lost half of you, sorry. By the way, you can relax a little bit. It's okay if you do. If you don't, that's fine. We know who you are. But that's not a breaking of trust. That's just I had something in mind that I thought it was going to be like, and the reality hits you. So you really do have to separate those, because unrealistic or unmet expectation is just a shifting of your thinking. Okay? This is actually how it is. Just as an example, okay, my parents are here. My mom has done every load of laundry my dad has ever worn. My mom has cooked every food item my dad has ever eaten. My dad has never swept the floor. My dad has never vacuumed the floor. He's of that generation. He did all of the other things. You know, I'll do the outside, you do the inside. So, we get married, and I found out that was an unrealistic expectation. And all of you women whose eyebrows are way up here are kind of like, yeah, that wouldn't work either, right? So that's not a breaking of trust. Let's clear that. Number two, write this down. We need to talk about the backgrounds or baggage of trust. The backgrounds or the baggage of trust. We all carry things into our marriage that affect our trust levels. Some of you came from wholesome, healthy, good families. Some of you came from broken families. And the experiences that we had growing up, we bring those with us into our relationship. And it doesn't matter if you've been married 2 years, 20 years, or 30 years. Those are things that you will always deal with. There were things I experienced growing up that so deeply affected me that when I'm surrounded by it again, it affects my day. Anybody know what I'm talking about there? So that baggage you bring with you. Previous relationships. Now, I'm sure all of you were high school sweethearts, only dated one person. But for the rest of us, you know, you may have had a bad relationship somewhere, and you bring those things with you. You want and you don't want in your family things that happened. I think all of us, I look at my family, she looks at her family, and we both have said, there are things my family did I don't ever want to do in our family, and there are things that we did in my family I think is the good way to do it, and she did the same thing. But sometimes when you come back together and you say, here's the good way to do it, it's not always the same. And so you have to work through who you have been raised by and bringing that into the relationship. Because, gentlemen, I think you figured it out by now, you didn't marry your mom. She's not the same person. There's almost 8 billion people in our world right now. Can you imagine that? 8 billion. If you were to divide the population just evenly between 4 billion men and 4 billion women, there's basically 3 different kinds of men, and there's 4 billion different kinds of women. None of them are the same. And that's wonderful. I've said that for many years, and I stand by it. By the way, somebody asked me years ago, they said, you keep saying there's 3 different kinds of men, but you never tell us what they are. Okay, small, medium, and large. We're all kind of the same. But the women are very different from each other. And so you have to, the Bible says, I believe it's 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, that the husband is to dwell with them according to knowledge. So you carry that baggage, but you have to work on learning them. Don't take out of your family, don't take it out on your family if you came from a bad situation. Speak to that, the father and husband.
So my parents actually divorced when I was very young, and my stepdad was a good man, but he could be a little harsh. He could be, before he got saved, he would get drunk sometimes, and that builds untrust in in the next person that you're around that's a male figure. And so you have to be careful. That's not my dad. He didn't do those things. If he gets a little irritated and speaks harshly, it's not going to end up the same way that my dad did. I thank the Lord for him saving my dad. My stepdad is who I'm referring to as my dad. Going through that divorce as a kid and then having a stepdad that at times could be a little bad, a little aggressive, that affected, you know, the way I looked at him. And so you have to be careful about bringing those things into your marriage with you. That's not the same person. And what they're experiencing and portraying in your marriage is not necessarily what happened in your home growing up.
So she came from a relationship where she was on pins and needles because, you know, some of you came from a relationship like that, you could see, okay, dad's in a mood, right? And things are going to be bad. So if I ever expressed any frustration, she would go to level 10. And I'm like, you need to chill out. I'm really not that upset. I mean, I'm over it. I didn't understand what was going on deep in her. And it took us years to bring some of those things out. And so, how many of you have some baggage? Right? So, yeah, I'm not going to ask if your spouse has baggage. You can answer that. So number 3, write this down, building trust. So there are ways that every Christian family can build trust. And you don't need to be passive. You need to be proactive about this. It needs to be an on-purpose thing you're doing to build trust in your relationship because it's vital. I want to be able to trust my wife, and I do. But that's not because of wishful thinking. It's because she has proven to be trustworthy in several areas. So let's talk about building trust. True and genuine trust actually takes the longest to establish. And sadly enough, it's one of the easiest to lose. You can spend 15 years in your marriage working hard to develop trust and then have one bad day, do one awful, stupid thing, and it's all gone. It's so delicate. And we're going to talk quite a bit about the rebuilding of trust process, but you need to hear me. You need to be very careful on your bad days. You need to be quick to go to God in the bad days, because it just takes one. It just takes one moment to do that. We fall in love pretty quickly. We can forgive quite quickly, but it takes a long time to build trust. It's one of the longest, hardest things to build, but one of the quickest and easiest things to lose. So what is a realistic expectation in trust? Let's think about this for a moment. A realistic expectation is not what we have seen in other people, but what we have in our spouse. The person you're married to is what you have to work with. We spoke a little bit about that. You're not married to your dad or your mom. You're not married to them. This is the one you have to work with. How many of you ever had an old junker car? It's this old beater car that, you know, you had to turn the key a certain way for it to start. You know, you couldn't pull it all the way down into drive. You had to start slowing down about 3 miles away because there were no brake pads left. You loaned that car. Did you ever loan that car to somebody else? And they're like, that's a death trap. I almost died in that thing. And you're like, oh, yeah, you know, reverse is actually neutral. And, you know, there's no seat. You've learned how to work in that car. And there you go. So, ladies, your husband is the old junker. And neutral is reverse. And there's no seat. And it doesn't go forward sometimes. So you have to learn the one that you're working with and build the trust with that person. So how do you evaluate trust? We were talking about this. It's not as easy as you would think. We came up with three things, and they might help you. How to evaluate trust. Number one, I'm talking about in your relationship. When you're looking at this person, ask questions like this. For instance, are they bad with money? Or are they irresponsible? Because there's a difference. When Lena and I first got married, I was bad with money. I was bad. If we had $100 in the bank, I thought, let's go to Outback. We got $100. And she's like, we have $220 worth of bills coming up. We don't have $100. We're $120 short. But I looked at that. Now, it wasn't that I was just like, I'm going to do whatever I want with the money. It was that I was bad with it. Do you understand the illustration? Sometimes when you're building trust with somebody, you have to say, okay, it's not that they're evil. It's not that they have bad intention. Maybe they're just bad at this, right? Number two, are they bad at time management or do they lack character? Some people have never been on time ever in their life. They have no concept of time. Basically enough, they're usually married to somebody who is a time-aphobic, right? I have what I call time-aphobia. It actually physically bothers me to be late. I would rather be an hour early than 1 minute late. That kills me. How many of you are with me? You're there, okay? All right. My wife likes to be on time. But, you know.
It's five-ish.
I hate ish. And so, you know, I was really frustrated that we started at 9:02 this morning. I was like, we've wasted time here, right? So some people are just, I'm enjoying life. Hey, you were supposed to be there 5 minutes ago. Where? You know, there's that. But some people are just irresponsible. They're going to be late to work because it's not important to them. They're not going to show up where they're supposed to be because they've had wrong priorities. Number three, an example. Do they just not notice the mess, or are they unwilling to clean up after themselves? You go ahead.
You can which illustration?
There are lots, I'm sad to say.
No, he's very willing to help. He just doesn't always see it. Or, like, he'll set something down thinking, I'll take care of that in a minute. And then 3 days later, he's like, where did that come from?
Right, so...
Last week.
Yeah, so... We have an upstairs, our bedroom is upstairs, and in the stairwell is a return vent for the air conditioner. And she got down there and she cleaned the return vent, and some dust fell on the landing there. And she said, when you vacuum upstairs, which is an assumption.
I did everything else and asked you to vacuum.
When you vacuum upstairs, would you vacuum that landing? Now, we're not nasty people, but you understand dust builds up on those vents. So when she scraped it off, there's like dust. It's noticeable, right? For most people. I realized yesterday what she was talking about 3 weeks ago.
It's still sitting there.
Because we're here. Now when we go home, I'm going to have every intention right now to vacuum that spot. I have a mantra that always goes through my mind. I'm trying to do this. It might help some of you. Put it away, don't put it down. I put it down with the intention of putting it away, and it never happens. So I'd be like, put it away, don't put it down. But sometimes some people don't notice, but there are some people who are unwilling to help. You do the dishes. You do the laundry. You're the woman, right? Wow, I'm giving an illustration. I'm not saying that. Maybe he's a good man, but he's just bad with money. Sometimes trust is a matter of growth and maturity. When we first got married, I was bad with money. I have grown in that. I have learned some things. I want to say this on record. I hate Dave Ramsey. Because of him, we're driving a 14-year-old vehicle, but it's paid for, we have the Every Dollar app, and we do a monthly budget and all of that. I jokingly refer to him as her boyfriend. She loves to listen to him on the drive back and forth to work, and she'll come in and say, I was listening to the radio. I'm like, oh, great. Well, never going out to eat again. But those kind of things have helped shape our relationship, and I've learned. I've grown. There has to be a realization that sometimes people start out bad at something, they can get better. They can grow, right? So this understanding requires discernment. Was this a dumb mistake, or was it malice? Was it immaturity or an intentional harm? We usually, I want you to talk about this. This is something the Lord put on your heart.
Well, I actually heard somebody say this and it stuck with me, that when we are evaluating our relationships, that we actually judge ourselves on our intentions, but we judge others on their actions. And so we think of ourselves as being better because we know what we were planning to do, or we knew how it was supposed to be, but when we look at that other person, like, they didn't do that. You know, we don't know that they intended to vacuum the stairs and just forgot. We just get angry that that hasn't been done, and we build resentment if we're not careful. We need to be careful about that. It's not that they're not untrustworthy all the time. Sometimes it's just immaturity or, I don't know, what would you call that when you don't see things that other people see?
Oblivious.
Oblivious, there's the word.
Thank you, Pastor Ross. Number four, let's move on. Number four, let's talk about rebuilding trust. Rebuilding trust. There are a wide range of reasons why trust can be lost. A wide range. Sometimes it's the accumulation of hundreds of things. Sometimes it's one tragic event. And you don't handle both of those the same, but you do. So let's think about this. Trust, it's not often valued until it's lost. You don't think about how much trust means to you until you can't trust that person anymore. And when that trust is lost, Most of us who are in a married relationship, we love each other enough, the first 1, 10, 15, 20 times, we're like, okay, we're going to work through this, we'll make it work. But when it's repeated and repeated and repeated, you become calloused and you put up walls and you become hard. That's not the way you were raised. It's not the way you want to be, but you become that. And now you are somebody you don't enjoy because you've lost trust. And there is hope in God. The primary areas people have their trust broken. We have several, and we'll work through them. First of all, would be an inappropriate relationship outside of marriage. That's the greatest thing that breaks trust. And by the way, I want everybody to hear me clearly. There's only one person you should ever flirt with, and that's the one you put a ring on their hand. Because if my wife saw me playfully flirting with another woman, then that is a complete and total violation of trust. And so, just don't. Okay? Just don't. You say, well, I'm just a playful person. Okay? Be playful with your spouse. Change the way you work and deal with people. So, you have that. Sexting. Having inappropriate texts. Adultery. Being unfaithful outside of your marriage. Pornography. All of these are trust destroyers. And what is often a temporary fulfilling of a desire is an eternal destruction of love and joy. And it's not worth it. I just found out this week of a man I consider to be a friend was unfaithful to his wife and has disqualified himself from ministry, but worse than that, he has destroyed the trust in his wife and then his kids and their marriages and everybody that was associated with him. For what? Honestly, for what? Let's say you go all the way through with it and you end up in bed with another person. For what? It's not worth it. Inappropriate relationship outside of your marriage destroys trust. Number two, an area that destroys trust, not just inappropriate relationships outside of marriage, finances. And one of the major things people fight over is finances. How have you ever gotten a fight over money? Right? Finances are a hot button issue because often you have two different philosophies in money. My dear friend Dave Ramsey, he says in every relationship there's a nerd and a free spirit. The nerd is the budgeter, they do the taxes, they do all of that. The free spirit's like, let's go to Culver's and have ice cream. And you know, so the nerd has to like give the free spirit an allowance so they don't blow all the money. And the free spirit is like, can I have my money this month? And we're going to go do some fun stuff. And you know, you have to have both though. That's called balance. That's healthy. It's good. If both of you are nerds, you'll never have fun. If both of you are free spirits, you'll be homeless, right? So finances is something you have to be on the same page with, but being irresponsible with money or stealing money is a destructive thing. Years ago, when I was irresponsible and immature, my wife would literally hide money. She would hide money because she knew we had bills to pay, and I didn't have enough maturity to not go out to eat all the time and do stupid things. And when I found out that she was hiding money, it didn't anger me, it broke my heart. She had to hide money so we could pay our bills. What kind of a loser am I? And God used that, but it wasn't a pleasant day, okay? And I had broken her trust in the money, not because I had evil intentions, but because I was irresponsible. And so we have been able to rebuild that trust. And the Lord has helped us. Hiding spending. You know, I don't buy anything that she doesn't know about. And that's mostly because of that stupid Every Dollar app that Dave Ramsey has. Every time I use my card, she's like, what is this? I'm like, I'm buying it for you. The second one was a mistake. The first one was a mistake. The second one's for you, right? This is your coffee, honey. But I'm joking. But there's an openness to that.
Yeah, and I've even had family members that have, like, opened accounts that their spouse doesn't know about, has credit cards they don't know about. That's not a healthy thing. And when that comes to light, and it will one day come to light, that's going to be a severe trust breaker in their relationship.
And their motive is, I'm doing this because I don't trust you. But when they find out, they're like, well, I don't trust you. And it's better to have a hard conversation than it is to hide things. I want to say something real quickly about bullying when it comes to money. That's my money. I work hard for my money. If I want a boat, I'm going to buy a boat. If I want a new driver, I'm going to buy it. It's my money. You're being a bully. That's not your money. It's your money. You are one flesh. You're supposed to be working together. And sometimes people have this idea, I can do what I want to do. Yeah, you can. And eventually you're going to do it alone. So stop being a bully when it comes to money. Inappropriate relationships outside of marriage. Number two, finances. Number three, areas that trust is broken. How you treat your family. Trust can be broken in that. We talked a little bit about that. Losing your temper, speaking harsh to your spouse or your children, being disengaged completely, being cruel towards the extended family, or being selfish about your hobbies and your belongings. You can lose trust when it comes to family. When we were first, okay, so I have time to go through this real quickly. I was raised in a preacher's home, but my dad is an evangelist, so I lived on a bus. That was our home. We didn't have a home anywhere else. And we traveled all over the United States of America doing week-long revivals, and we lived in a bus. That was our home. But people did not respect the fact that it was our home. They just thought, hey, there's a cool bus. And so we would have pastors knock on our door and say, I got our deacons. I want to bring them in and show them your bus. Or there would be women that would knock on the door and say, hey, we want to come in and show our kids how you do school. We had no privacy whatsoever. You know, the whole front of our bus is a windshield, and we made curtains to cover it to block some sun and have some privacy. And you would see eyeballs looking through any crack, people looking in our house. You know, people were pulling on the door, trying to get in our door. It was awful. We had no privacy whatsoever. And I love Baptists, but we're the worst. So we get married, and her family was the kind of family that would come over and visit without announcing or knocking. They just walk in the door. Hey, we're here. So that didn't work. So what did I do? I went far too far. And I made her and her family uncomfortable being in our home and around us. Now they're like, okay, it was 6 months out. Is this enough notice to let you know we'd like to text? You know, and I went far too far. So now her family has a little PTSD because I'm like, you can't just walk in my home, right? And then my family is like, hey, we're in your driveway. And I'm like, okay, come on in. So she's like, beg your pardon? Your family can do it, but mine can't? I'm like, yeah, but your family's weird, and mine is... The longer you live, you're like, wow, my family's really weird, right? So how you treat your family, you can break trust. Number four, dishonesty. Dishonesty. Can I tell you something? The word guile, it means half-truth, and a half-truth is a full lie. Learn to be brutally truthful. It's better. Can I tell you, it is easier to deal with ugly truth than it is uncertainty. Put it on the table. It is easier to deal with it. Let's imagine a bad scenario. So let's imagine there's a husband who's been hiding an addiction to pornography. He's been hiding it. I want you to know something. The wife suspects. She does. So he does the thing he never dreamed he would do. He comes in one day and says, "Honey, I need to tell you something I am not proud of. I believe I am addicted to pornography." Every wife would be hurt, would be crushed, but would say, "Okay, now I know I can deal with it. How you deal with it is going to go, but that's better than him just getting better at hiding things." What if the wife comes in and says, "I don't know how to tell you this. I opened a separate bank account, and here's my credit cards, and I've got $40,000 in credit card debt." You're going to go, "Well, at least now I know, and we can deal with it." Do you understand? Look, nobody likes to deal with problems, and everybody has problems. So, how you be dishonest, hiding things. Number five, just write this down. Are you ready? My issue. So, maybe it's not an inappropriate relationship outside of marriage. Maybe it's not finances or how you treat your family. But all of us have things that have happened. So, whatever it is, you can fill that in. You're not turning in your notebooks, so nobody's going to see your notes there. But we all have things. Things that have caused you to lose trust, okay? Now, the only way to rebuild trust is to first accept that trust has been lost. Say something about that, would you?
So, you can't deal with something if you don't know the truth of it, first of all. Like you said, dealing with a hard truth is way easier than just trying to guess and figure out and never being sure about it. But you have to address that trust has been lost both on both sides. So he, or whoever the offender is, I'm just saying he because he's there. So, and he's usually the offender now. The offender has to recognize that they've broken trust, but the one that's been offended has to recognize also that their trust has been broken, so that you both recognize. And if he doesn't recognize that he's broken my trust, but I feel that way, I need to say that. You can't assume that he knows that that thing, you know, broke your trust.
But every marriage, you understand, you know, the woman drops hints, hopes the husband will pick it up, doesn't realize she's married a dumb person who never notices anything, right? Don't dance around it. You need to sit them down and say, "You have hurt me. We need to deal with this," right? You have hurt me. You can't hint or drop innuendo. And by the way, the offender needs to recognize the harm that they have caused and that they're going to reap a harvest of distrust. If I have violated her trust, I have to recognize I did that to her. I can't blame her for being hurt and losing trust. I'm the one that did it, right? So I have to be willing and honest and truthful to say, "This is me. This is on me." Now, we know most people have a hard time taking all responsibility. But I've learned something, and this is lived out to be true many, many times. In a good relationship, whether it's your spouse or a friend or somebody at church, if there's some offense, if you'll go ahead and take all the blame, if they have character, they'll usually take some of that blame back. "This was all my fault." And then they say, "You know, it's really not all your fault. I didn't handle this right," or something like that. Go ahead and accept all the responsibility. And don't be, "Well, she doesn't trust me anymore." No. You were untrustworthy. Quit flipping it back on them. The trust breaker has earned all the distancing, all the coldness and any goodness that comes back into that relationship is because of grace. So you get kind of offended and upset. Well, I hurt them and they can't get over it. That's not your place. I don't get to slap her and then say, don't be red in the face. Right? I did that. Rebuilding trust is an accumulation of thousands of small things, not one big apology. I want to say that again. We're talking about rebuilding trust. It is an accumulation of thousands of things, not one big apology. You can't go buy a dozen roses and a bracelet and say, my bad, and everything be fine. Do you understand? It's going to take a lot of time. And by the way, the greater the hurt, the longer it's going to take. Right? So let me give you steps for rebuilding trust, and then we'll be done. How many more pages do we have here? All right, steps for rebuilding trust. Number one, there must be an actual apology. Sounds funny, but it's true, right? Gary Chapman wrote a book, The Five Love Languages. Anybody ever heard of that? The Five Love. He came out with another one. You should look up. It's called The Five Apology Languages. Did you know that not everybody receives an apology the same way? For instance, expressing regret, saying, I'm sorry. Some people want to hear them say, I'm sorry. Another way of an apology is accepting responsibility. I was wrong. The third way is making restitution. How can I make it right? Number four, planned change, saying I'll take steps to prevent a reoccurrence. And then five, requesting forgiveness, asking, can you find it in your heart to forgive me? We all have a different thing. For instance, the way my wife wants me to apologize is she doesn't want me to say, can you find it in your heart to forgive me? Why?
I'm already going to forgive you.
That's amazing. What a blessing. What she wants from me is to say, honey, I messed up. Here's what I'm going to do in the future to not end up here again. My plan of action. What I want from her is to say, I was wrong. I haven't heard it yet, but that's what I want. I want her to say, I was wrong. Now, isn't it weird that we don't actually accept apologies the same way? You need to know how your spouse receives an apology and give it to them how they need it. So there needs to be an actual apology. Some people cannot and will not admit that they were wrong. This applies in small things and big things. If you're running late, if you don't deal with the little things, then they're going to grow. Take care of things quickly, by the way. Listen, if you mess up, fix it right there. Don't let it build. Things never stay stagnant, right? Frustration never gets smaller, does it? You're like, oh, that's so annoying. Oh, I feel better now. No, it's like, oh, that's so annoying. I'm going to choke him in his sleep. That's how we grow in our things. So there has to be, number one, an actual apology. Number two, there has to be a decision to forgive. Now, patience is going to be required on both parties. You're both going to have to be patient. Forgiveness and trust, by the way, are not synonymous. Forgiveness and trust are not the same. Explain that.
So, what we mean by that is forgiveness has to do with a past offense. I forgive you for that. Trust has to do with things moving forward. And so while I can forgive you for this, that doesn't mean I trust you completely out here. That's the difference there.
Right. And by the way, the offender, when the person has problems trusting, they will say, well, why can't you forgive me? I thought you said you forgave me. They forgave you for doing that. They're just having a hard time moving forward. That's a hard thing to accept, isn't it? That's why it takes patience. Forgiveness is important. That's how it is. So let me speak first to the person that's been hurt. Maybe you've been hurt. You are actually not justified in becoming resentful. You are not justified in being bitter. And here's why. We have been commanded by God to forgive. We have been told to forgive one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven us. And here's why. Because bitterness is the only poison that kills the vessel, not the one you hate. If you become resentful, all you're doing is destroying your own joy, your own heart, your own happiness, your own relationship, your own spirit with God. You are much better off to say, you know what? I'm going to forgive you because my joy is more important to me. The one that's been hurt, you have to forgive. Then we've only been commanded to trust completely in God, remember? You don't have to be a doormat. You don't have to take it every time. Stand up. Stand your ground. I don't trust you with our money. I don't trust you around other women. I don't trust you around men. Stand up for yourself. You don't have to be a doormat. There's nothing wrong with saying, this is what I expect from you moving forward. It should be reasonable, spiritual, not spiteful. But the one who's been hurt needs to stand up and say, if you want to make it right, here's what I expect from you. You say, well, that's not my personality. Then you're going to be a doormat and you're going to be abused. Right? So stand up for yourself. What you did was evil, it was wrong, it was hurtful, and the rest of our path forward may never be the same again. My forgiveness of that hurt may not fix all of our future. Sometimes, something can happen that will permanently alter your course. Maybe you don't break up, maybe you stay married, but your relationship is permanently changed. That's your new norm. You say, well, I wish things were back the way they were. Yeah, guess who ruined that? Well, they won't forgive me. Yeah, guess who did that? Number three, have a plan moving forward. An actual apology. Number two, a decision to forgive. Number three, have a plan moving forward. What are you going to do? What are you not going to do to not bring us here again? There's a statement I want my wife to explain here.
I heard this recently in something I was listening, and they said to choose guilt over resentment every time. And that's really resonating with me, because I often don't want to bring things up because I feel guilty for bringing things up. But then, if I don't bring them up, I start getting resentful in my heart. So for instance, let's go back to the vacuuming, okay?
Of course.
I actually didn't get resentful about that one, but I could have, because it's been sitting there for a long time. They're like, you are resentful, you're just talking about it. We just talked about it last night. I totally didn't think about it. But I could think, he doesn't love me. He doesn't ever do what I want him to do. I asked him specifically to do that thing. He's ignoring what I want. But what in reality is, we've been really busy. We've just been out of town. He's been working double at the church trying to get things prepared for us to be able to go out of town. He just didn't think about it. He didn't notice it. There have been things sitting on top of it at times, those kind of things. So instead of me looking at that and thinking, which I have done, I will admit this, there have been times where I have asked him to do something, or I've seen him set something down, and I will look at it and be like, I am not picking that up. He needs to get that. And then usually the Lord speaks to my heart. Like, you know, you go through those things, like, it would only take 1 second for him to pick that up and put it away. Why won't he do that? Why doesn't he see that? Why doesn't he tend to that? And you start building that kind of resentment, you know? So you either need to talk to him about it, or what the Lord usually says to my heart is, if it only takes 1 second, why can't you just do it?
I love the Lord.
But you have to be careful about building that resentment. And if you're like me, where you feel guilty bringing something up, again, you need to get over that, because usually they've just forgotten. It's not that they have ill feelings.
And in our relationship, this is just us, it doesn't offend me when she reminds me of things. Half the time, in my mind, that's the first I've ever actually heard it, you know. Do you remember when you told me you would do that? I'd be like, hey, that needs to be done. And she's like, I'm like, you want a kiss? So have a plan moving forward. And then last, number four, there needs to be an acceptance of accountability. An acceptance of accountability. When there has been repeated violations of trust, said I would fix it and I didn't, I said I would not do it again and I did, there's some things that need to happen. First of all, the offender needs to recognize that they have forfeited their right to be offended by the other person's lack of trust. You forfeited your right to be offended that they can't let it go. That's a hard thing to accept. But you surrendered that by violating their trust. Now, I'm going to make a strong statement. I want you to give me the grace to say it, please. Only a narcissist repeatedly offends and maintains that they're the victim because they aren't trusted. That's a manipulator. They constantly offend you, and then when you can't give up, you're like, oh, why can't you forgive me? Well, it's because you're untrustworthy. And only a narcissist hurts and then plays the victim. Somebody with real character, if they hurt somebody, they're going to say, I hurt you and your feelings. You can do whatever you want. If you want to be hurt, that's fine. If you can't get over it, that's my fault, not yours. Then, number five, give opportunities to exercise trust. There needs to be an opportunity to grow again, to move forward again. There needs to be a chance, right? So, let me just give you a couple of examples. If you blew through some money, maybe you set up a monthly allowance. Be okay with being asked about the things that you bought. So, if I have violated our trust with finances, and I agree that we're going to have a conversation monthly about our budget, and she says, what is this? I don't get to go, why don't you trust me anymore? You have to agree to be accountable. All right? I did buy that. That's not new. That's been here for a while, right? But you don't get to be like, why are they asking me all these questions? Well, because you messed up. So, be okay with giving opportunities to exercise trust. I think every Christian couple, this is just my opinion, every Christian couple should sit down at the beginning of every month and plan your monthly budget. I think every Christian couple should do that. Here's all the money that's coming in. Here's all of our bills. Here's our tithe. Here's our offerings. Here's our restaurant expenses, and you sit down and you agree at the beginning of the month, this is what we're doing. We're working together as a team. Every Christian couple should do that. Look, my wife is the one that handles all the money, because you've heard, but we still sit down every month and we work together to decide where every dollar is going. You know what that does? That frees us. That builds trust, that gives an opportunity to grow in that area again. Let's say that it wasn't money. Let's say that something inappropriate happened with another person. Let's say he was at work and was flirting with a woman. There's opportunities to go forward. So he's going to say, all right, we're only going to be co-workers. He's going to say that to her. I crossed the line. It's never going to happen again. I will never flirt with you, and you're never going to flirt with me. You say, you want to get real serious? Call your wife, put her on speakerphone, put the phone in your pocket, and have the conversation with the woman. How serious are you? It's not never going to happen again. There are some men you know you shouldn't be trusted with a smartphone. You cannot stay away from wicked things. Go back to a flip phone and save your marriage. It's not worth it. You say, well, I don't want to be like my grandfather or my dad. Get over yourself. Your pride is going to lead you to destruction. So there has to be an opportunity to move forward. You work together, you put a game plan together, and you rebuild trust. And I want to tell you, there is hope. There is hope. Let me close with this illustration. I have two uncles who were pastors. Both of them were unfaithful to their wives. Awful. One never accepted any accountability for it, blamed everybody else. He's now on his third marriage. By the way, my aunt is now on her third marriage. And their two daughters have lived just totally destroyed lives. The other uncle fell on his face, begged God to forgive him, accepted all responsibility, did whatever he was asked to do to make it right, and 28 years later, they're still together. There is a path forward, but it's going to take teamwork and the grace of God to move forward. I don't know. Maybe you're here and you're getting information to help some other people. Remind them, God is able. Grace is here. Maybe some things have happened in your relationship that have shaken your foundation. God is able. The fact that you're here says we're trying to work on this. So let the Lord help you. And you have anything else you'd like to close with? Let's pray together. Father, I thank you so much that you forgive us. You give us grace and opportunities to continue to serve you when we have proven we do not deserve it. So Lord, help us to learn from your example. Restore the joy and the trust in our marriages and relationships. Help us to build trust. Help us to rebuild trust. In Jesus' name, amen.